Stand by. Your Steve Jones Show audio is loading now. SteveJonesShow.com podcasts are sponsored by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, the beverage supermarket.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome to the Friday edition of the Steve Jones Show, sponsored by Brewers Outlet, Rangit Street, Sunbury. Perfect way to kick off the weekend. Head to Brewers Outlet. Steve will be joining us from the Sunbury Motors Studio momentarily. Lots of Penn State stuff to talk about. Got an email for Steve that asked how the scrimmage went. We'll get an update from Steve on that and get you set for everything that's been going on there. 1 week almost completely in the books in the high school football realm of practices. And talking with a few coaches over the last couple of days, they seem very, very happy with the way things have been put together. It's a lot different now than it was, I don't know, I would say maybe even 10 years ago, as players are spending a lot of time in the summer doing some lifting and voluntary lifting and doing some voluntary conditioning work. So that first week of practice in high school is a lot different than it used to be. Used to be you'd spend that first week of practice, the first 3 days, just trying to get in shape and then hoping you were able to be in decent shape for that first scrimmage. But now a lot of the guys playing are already in pretty good shape, so they can focus on a little more skills and offensive line blocking schemes. And, of course, for some coaches and for some teams, maybe even a whole new type of offense. Lots of new coaches around the area. Lewisburg with Jeremy Wynn. Then you have Shikellamy with a new coach, Todd Tilford from Lewisburg. So that's just mentioning a few of them that we'll be talking with over the next couple of weeks as the high school football season gets in full swing. And as we have in the past, we'll have lots of high school football on the stations of Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation right here on WKOK. We'll follow the Shikellamy Braves every Friday night on 100.9 The Valley. It'll be Lewisburg Green Dragons football once again. Eagle 107 will be the home for Sealands Grove Seals football. And on 1380 WMLP, you'll be able to follow the Milton Black Panthers, a team that was just a few steps away from a District 4 championship 1 year ago. It'll be interesting to see how the team that in Milton that has struggled for several years now and had been the doormat for a long time, now knocking on the door of a District 4 championship instead of having everybody blow right by them. So we'll be covering all those and have all the highlights and scores following the Seals game on Eagle 107 as well from all four games and highlights from across the Heartland Athletic Conference as well every Friday night. And that is only 2 weeks away. Matter of fact, a lot of those schools that we just talked about with high school football will have a scrimmage either scheduled for tonight or most likely sometime tomorrow, and then another scrimmage next Friday night or Saturday to get everything rolling for the 31st, which will be the start of the season. And matter of fact, I'll be starting the season at the Silver Bowl in Mount Carmel. Can't remember the last time I was in Mount Carmel this early in the season. I may not be. I mean, I've been doing several years now, so they all start to run together after a bit. But it's the first time I can remember being in Mount Carmel this early in the season. But Red Tornadoes coming off a very successful year with Coach Carmen DeFrancesco. No doubt he will have them ready once again, and we'll try and work on getting him on the program as well here on the Steve Jones Show as we get ready for that game. And that game's turned into a very entertaining game over the last several years, dating back to a few years ago when Shikellamy really was struggling and ended up shutting out Mount Carmel at Shikellamy Stadium. I believe that score was 6-0, and I want to say that was probably 2 or 3, maybe even 4 years ago now, but that was a big win for the Braves and a tough loss for the Red Tornadoes, who at the time had missed the playoffs for the first time in short of forever. And I remember Coach Williams saying, you know, we've had guys on this team that just don't know how to fight for a playoff spot. That's how successful that Mount Carmel program has been with 700-plus wins. I mean, that's a team that just doesn't seem to not make the playoffs. In that one particular year, they were struggling to make the playoffs. And that's, like you said, it was the first time they've ever had that issue that most of those players can remember all the way down to junior high. And another interesting scenario in the Pennsylvania Heartland Athletic Conference this year that I don't know if it's widely known yet, other than folks that are involved at the junior high level, but there will be no ninth grade football this year in the Pennsylvania Heartland Athletic Conference. And I find that very interesting. Because you're going to have a lot of freshmen that are going to make the step up to JV and varsity, and then you're going to have some freshmen down to junior high. So it'll be interesting to see how teams are able to find the right players and put them in the right spots and develop their program without that freshman ball. Freshman ball has been very popular in high school.
Well done.
Thank you.
Dan from Sealands Grove has a question, but can only listen from 3 to 3:30 when he has to go to work. He asks, can Steve give a Penn State scrimmage update? He listened yesterday, but didn't know if you gave an update on the latest scrimmage. Well, I suppose we can do that.
That would be you.
Yes. Well, here we go. There's no doubt who the first quarterback is. That's Matt McGloin. And McGloin, I think, has had a very good preseason to this point. Very good. And he is... There's no doubt that he's the leader. And then after that, it's Paul Jones. And then Stephen Bench would be third right now. And he's been getting a lot of reps. And considering he has to, considering that, you know, he has to be in a crash course of learning, I think he's done extremely well. All things considered. But, he still makes freshman mistakes. Bill Belton has been really good so far at the tailback spot. He has been, I think, everything that you would hope he would be, especially in this particular situation. And he has stepped up, and it's been one of the really better moves that's been made by this coaching staff when it comes to when it comes to moving personnel to the right spot. And he's been really, he can catch the ball. And not only that, he's become a better receiver. I mean, he's already a good receiver in the backfield. He actually has handled, I think, he's been better at blitz pickup. Derek Day is right there, and Day does all the little things you love in a tailback. Does them all. And I think that, he may not be the fastest of the tailbacks or so on and so forth. But I think at the same time, he is... a guy that's going to get his fair share of time. Curtis Dukes, I think, is doing a little bit better. He's catching on to what they want, which is important because he's catching on to what they want. I like that a lot. And then there's Zach Zwinek, who's also very good at that tailback spot as well. And Akeel Lynch has been able to break a run here and there along the way, and you have to like the way the freshman handles things. And you know darn well that Zordich does all those little things you expect Zordich to do. Donovan Smith is finally back in and getting some reps, but that first group has remained intact. That would be Farrell and Gress at the tackles. Stankavage at center, Urschel and Diefenbach at the guards. Diefenbach's done a nice job, as Bill O'Brien said in this teleconference yesterday, of making that transition from center to guard. But Smith is finally getting back into the mix, slowly but surely. I mean, he's just in the initial stages of it. The tight ends, Gary Gilliam's been really good. Kyle Carter, I think, has a chance to be one of the truly special tight ends Penn State's had. And Penn State has a great lineage of tight ends, ranging all the way back, to a guy like Ted Kwolek, to Mickey Schuler, and all the way through. I mean, Kyle Brady, Dean Domitio, John Gilmore, Stewart, Corliss, young Mick Schuler. And I think Carter has a chance to be a very special player at that spot. Gary Gilliam's going to be really good. He's the old man of the group. And Jesse James has been fine. Watch for a guy named Matt Lehman. One of those guys has great hands and can block. And then Brett Wilkerson's another guy, the freshman. Now you go to the wideouts.
Can I quickly interject a question?
No.
You talked about, I'm on a roll.
Oh, I'm walking out.
Oh, please. You were talking about Gary Gilliam, and I wonder, you know, you feel really good about him. Obviously, he looks really good coming off that knee injury.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, sometimes when you have a knee injury, you don't want to.
He was close to playing in the bowl game.
Yeah, you just don't want to do the same thing that caused it, so you're a little hesitant, but you don't see any of the hesitation. That's great.
Not even close. He's been fine. And he was close to playing last December. It's August now, so he's way beyond that point. Wideouts. Allen Robinson has had a really good camp. Really good camp. Alex Kenny's been good. But some freshmen have worked their way in to this thing as well. Now, you still have veterans like Brandon Mosby Felder. Shawnee Kersey's been bumped up, so he's missed a little bit of time. But Trevor Williams is a freshman that has stepped up. And Geno Lewis is a freshman that's stepped up. And I think Malik Golden can be pretty good. But Williams and Lewis are two freshmen that have stepped up to that wideout spot that I think have been impressive so far to go with that mix of veterans. Then Christian Kuntz, mostly has been out there. He's had a couple days where he's missed or whatever, but he's mostly been out there. And when he's been out there, he's been five. Matt Zanilato's been very good, but he's been bumped up a little bit lately. And Shawnee Kersey's been bumped up. Now you go over to the defense. Hill and Jones have been really good, backed up by Boblitz and Terry, who are both always good. James Terry's just one of those guys you never talk about. He's just a good football player. Then you go outside, Sean Stanley, Deion Barnes, then Pete Massaro. You know, they spot Massaro here and there. And then Anthony Zettel at that end spot looks good. It's interesting. You know, he and Boblitz have flipped, and it's worked out, I think, really well for both of them. And, of course, C.J. Alanian. Carson's your rock in the middle. Hodges has had a spectacular preseason. Maudie has had a really good preseason. Jack Ham and I were talking about Maudie this morning, as a matter of fact, about how impressed we are with him. But then behind that, Mike Yancic has had a couple days here and there where he's missed. When he's been out there, he's been very good. Naeem Wortman has been very good. I mean, you want to talk about a great athlete playing linebacker. That's a great athlete playing linebacker, and he's in that middle spot. Mike Hull, really good. He'd start for a lot of teams. And Ben Klein, just cutting his teeth at that outside linebacking spot, but he did well in the spring, and he's followed up. He's done well here. Now, in the secondary, as Bill O'Brien said in his teleconference yesterday, Jake Fignano's been out. He's getting closer, but he's still out. And Malcolm Willis with an ankle's been out for a little bit. But he'll get back into the mix shortly. That's opened the door for some freshmen to play key roles in this. Adrian Amos has split his time between corner and safety. Stephen Obeng Archibong has really come on and had a very good preseason. Stephon Morris has had a really good preseason, which you would expect. Jesse Della Valle has really come on and done well in the preseason. And then you have also Daquan Davis. Daquan Davis is a really good-looking young corner. Really good. Standout almost in some ways. Jordan Lucas, another corner, and Jake Kiley brings a lot in that safety spot. And Ryan Kaiser has done really well. He is back full go, and I have to give him all the credit in the world. Some people didn't think he'd be back until the end of September.
Yeah, you thought September or October at best. That's impressive.
Mm-hmm. So he's back. As I said when the injury happened, the Normal time for his injury is anywhere from 4 to 6 months. And initially it looked like it was going to be the 4 month thing. Then I remember talking to him. He said, no, it might be longer than that. That's why I was talking about September. Well, he got it going and he's back out there. He's done very, very well. Sam Ficken, for the most part, has done pretty well as the place kicker. Emery Etter is the snapper for both. And Etter actually was the snapper back in 2010. And with Ty Howell's injury, because Howell partially tore a pectoral muscle, Ty probably is not back until the end of September. That's opened the door for Emery Etter to be the snapper on everything. And between Kaiser and McGloin, that's your holder. And then, of course, the punt thing's still up in the air, but I think Alex Butterworth still has an advantage there. And Ficken does the kickoff work. So I hope that answered his question. If you have any questions yourself, I'll answer them at 1-800-795-9565 on the Lenape Solar Hotline. Do you have any more questions, Kevin?
Oh, I'm sure I do, but I'll save them as we go along.
You'll save them as we go along.
I always have questions. Things pop into my head as we go along throughout the day.
I see. Well. Our number is 1-800-795-9565. We are being brought to you today, and we're very happy they have renewed Brewer's Outlet, the beverage supermarket. I could go for about 10 of them right now. Reagan Street in Sunbury. We'll come back with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK after this.
Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza is having their River Fest of Savings. Choose from over 200 pre-owned vehicles at one location, and they all come with Sunbury Motors' lowest price promise. Sunbury Motors researches the market and makes sure their prices are the lowest of any like vehicle from a franchise dealer within a 50-mile radius. Pick from 15 pre-owned Escapes starting at $12,943. Choose from 13 Ford Focuses as low as $9,621. Sunbury Motors has one of the largest selections of used trucks in Central PA. Browse through over 30 F-150s, including a King Ranch 4x4 crew cab for only $13,563. SMC has 25 pre-owned Hyundais with Accents, Elantras, Sonatas, and Santa Fes in stock for immediate delivery. Sunbury Motors has every vehicle clearly marked with our lowest price promise. So hurry in to Sunbury Motors during River Fest of Savings. SMC in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza and at sunburymotors.com. Proudly serving the Susquehanna Valley since 1915.
Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury has all your summer partying needs. They have beer, they have snacks, they have soda, they have water. And did I mention they have beer? Brewers Outlet has a huge selection of imports and microbrews, some incredible deals, and they're a great beverage shoppable store. Fresh roasted peanuts daily, and check this out, a new Help Yourself Pickle Bar. Brewers Outlet, the beverage supermarket, Sunbury, wants you to enjoy the summer, and don't forget the beer.
Welcome back. Today's show being brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury. The beverage supermarket. Kevin says, try the olives.
Absolutely. Pickles are good, too. And they have some cool, refreshing beverages that aren't bad either.
Wonderful. Well, I think maybe when I go there on Tuesday, I'll stop.
That's a good plan.
Mm-hmm. I'm in Tuesday night. Kevin and I are playing the Edison.
That's an interesting way to put it.
Welcome to the Edison, everybody.
Hey!
Yeah, I guess we're having, a big dinner there, huh?
I don't know if it's a big dinner, but it's a nice little get-together.
Great. So you, me, and who? The station have a mascot? What?
Just you and me. I told you it would be a whole bunch of other people, but it's just you and me.
Yeah. Barty's a no-show?
No.
Come on.
She's working.
She has my permission to be off.
Oh, well, that changes everything then, doesn't it? Hey, Little League World Series update. Bottom of the fourth, Canada leads Mexico in a slugfest, 11-9. 2 hours and 18 runs. It's now up to two plus hours and 20 runs.
Hmm.
Not much pitching there.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, 11-9. There have been, let's see, Canada's line score is 7 in the first, 1 in the second, 2 in the third, 4 in the fourth. I'm sorry, 1 in the fourth. Mexico's line score is 1 in the first, 7 in the second, scoreless in the third, and 1 in the fourth. It's 11 runs, 9 hits, no errors for Canada, 9 runs, 12 hits, and an error for Mexico. Listen, you're in the fourth inning of a Little League World Series game, and there's only one error. That's a lot of hitting going on.
Yeah, a lot of hitting. Well, those games are fun.
Can you imagine being down, going to the bottom of the first inning? Oh, by the way, you're down 7-0. Only 3 runs from the 10-run rule. Let's go get a run, boys. mean, 7-1 at the end of the first, and then they reverse it, and Mexico gets 7 of their own and ties it in the bottom of the second. That's what I love about Little League Baseball, right there. You can be down 7 runs in the first inning, looking down the barrel of a mercy rule game and a 10-run game, and all of a sudden, it's 11-9, bottom of the fourth.
One of these days, I'll get up there for one of them.
I'll get you there.
Oh, I have enough invites. I mean, Rob Thomas, the public address announcer, is always telling me, come on up, join me.
Oh, sorry. I can't. My invite's not good enough.
Well, at least you admit it.
Time for the news. See you, Steve.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Great to have you with us. Today's show being brought to you by Brewers Outlet, the beverage supermarket, Reagan Street in Sunbury. Let It Be Solar hotline's open at 1-800-795-9565. Go to letitbesolar.com. And we're in the beautiful Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you with us. Kevin's all excited about trading Little League pins.
No, not me. Well, that's not true. I do have a page in his pin book of pins, but I usually don't trade them.
Oh, I mean, your son loves it.
Daniel trades constantly. That's it. I mean, the fact that he gets to watch a little baseball is okay, too, but that's not why he goes to Little League World Series.
Well, I guess we all collect our own whatever.
Sure.
I mean, I collected cards when I was a kid.
Now you wish you had them. You could be retired.
I do have them.
Yes, but they're not mint, are they?
Of course they're not mint. They're normal.
I remember my dad used to say, I wish I had the thought of what these things would be like, how much these would be worth at 40 years old. He said, we used to pitch them in a hat, put them in the spokes of our bike, listen to them click. He said, I think of all the money I destroyed in my bicycle.
No, I used them in a baseball game. In the field, used a lever and a fulcrum, Lincoln logs, boom, little measuring stick.
You what? No, what? You what? You used them? How did you use them?
In my basement.
Okay.
I drew a baseball field.
Right.
I was probably, I want to say, 8, 9 years old.
Okay.
I drew a baseball field. And
I'm hoping it was an unfinished basement or your parents would be very upset.
No, it's a finished basement.
Okay, go ahead.
It's an unfinished basement. Yeah, I know what you mean. on the concrete floor, I drew a baseball field out.
Okay.
And then my father had his own sheet metal fabrication shop, which meant he would order sheets of steel, and those sheets of steel would come encased in cardboard. I took the cardboard and I made walls out of the cardboard for the outfield.
So you built an outfield fence.
Built an outfield fence, and okay. I built a manual scoreboard.
That's clever.
Which I put that in center field.
Nice.
And my monster was in right field. And I had two bullpens made out of Lincoln Logs. And then I'd take a side of a Lincoln Log, one of the green roof pieces, so I'd use that as the fulcrum and lever, and then the little corner Lincoln Log was the ball. And I'd place that in the back, and I'd flip it in the air.
Okay.
And I had a measuring stick, and I landed in a spot, and if it landed in a certain, you know, within the measuring stick of a baseball card, it was an out.
So what you're saying is you invented the first baseball, you know, not video game, but arcade style game, and didn't patent it. Because I played something very similar in the 70s.
Well, it's not really an arcade game, but I mean, the ball hit the wall, it was a double.
Okay.
Okay. If the ball hit the scoreboard, it was a triple. If the ball went over the wall, it was a home run, and anything that fell in, if it went in the bullpen, it was a home run, too.
Okay.
And if it fell in anywhere outside of the measuring stick, it was a base hit.
That was very clever. That was very clever.
So that's what I use my baseball cards for.
Because I was thinking, I played a game in the 70s that was similar to that, where the ball would like come up from the pitcher's mound underneath a little metal flap, and then you'd have to hit the button to swing a bat, and it would actually hit it somewhere in the field, and depending on what flap you hit is where the runner went. Or right. If you ended up getting one into the upper deck, it became a home run. I only ever did that once. I only got the ball elevated once. It's tough to take a steel ball and get underneath it when don't have any control except hitting a button.
Oh, no question about that. No, it's very difficult.
But that's a clever game.
So that's what I made up. And that's how I use my baseball cards. And I still have the cards. They're in a box in a closet here. I think they were in my closet upstairs in my mom's house. And she said, here, take these. So, I mean, my card collection has in it Hank Aaron, Willie Mays, Pete Rose, Mickey Mantle, Carl Yastrzemski, Roberto Clemente, Johnny Callison, Richie Allen, Jim Bunning, Chris Short, Jim Lomborg, Earl Wilson, Al Kaline. And football, I still have the football cards, which includes Jim Brown.
Why were football cards not worth as much as baseball cards for such a long time?
I actually started buying football cards first before I bought baseball cards.
Did you? Why were they always worth less? For so long, a football card was not worth near what baseball would be.
Right. Well, my football cards, Jim Brown, Johnny Unitas, Bart Starr, Paul Hornung, Fran Tarkenton, Joe Namath.
Now, are these rookie cards or?
No.
Are these cards? These, okay, all right.
Some of them might be rookie
cards.
Some
of them might be, right.
And hockey, Bobby Orr, Phil Esposito, Bobby Hull, Gordie Howe, Dave Keon, John McKenzie. You know, guys like that. Rod Gilbert.
My father's favorite was a Harmon Killebrew rookie card.
With the Washington Senators.
The problem is, it was one of them he used in the spokes of his bike, so it was pretty much destroyed. It broke his heart when he found out how much money that thing was worth.
Oh, I'm sure.
It would have been somewhere close to mint. So that was when we got the idea, hey, you know what? We're going to get a set of cards. I'm like, that's a great idea. So we order them out of this catalog because, you know, we didn't have the internet then. So we order them out of the catalog because we didn't know where else to get a whole set from Topps. And I think it was a 1981 set. And I think it's still worth about $30. The only thing to come out of that was a second-year rookie Henderson. That's it. I mean, if there was a way to get the worst card set ever made, I think I own it. And you know what? To this day, those cards were not touched by any hands. We wore gloves. We put them in a photo album. You know, one of those where you, you know, like,
right,
where you could set them in and they wouldn't slide all over the place. You put the plastic cover across it. Yeah, that didn't work out so well.
Yeah, mine are still in a box. There are no plastic covers or anything like that. I have basketball cards, too. Jerry West, Will Chamberlain, John Havlicek, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. I mean, I have those, too.
That's an interesting question on our Lenape Solar hotline at 1-800-795-9565. What's the best card you have, and what condition is it in?
Yeah.
So it doesn't mean it doesn't mean it has to be the one that's valued the most. What's the best card you have, even if it's in terrible condition? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, mine would be probably Mantle, Jim Brown, and Bobby Orr. Probably be the three. And Havlicek would be four.
I think mine would have to be, the best one I have is a rookie Donruss Cal Ripken.
That's great.
But I think that year, if I remember right, that year Donruss had an issue with the cut. And you'll hear it referred to as 60-40 or 80-20. It's off-center by that grade. And the one I have is 80-20. If you could find anything under 60-40, I understand it almost doubles it, because trying to find one that's 50-50 is almost unheard of.
Right. Well, I just like to know what people collected. That's what I'd like to know.
I collected the team. I never collected the individual card as much for many, many years.
Well, no, I always wanted to make sure I had my entire New York Giants collection.
Right.
Like entire Bruins.
Like in the late 70s, I traded all my Phillies cards away, and I had a rookie Mike Schmidt. I mean, I traded all my Phillies cards away because I was a Pirates kid. My family, you know, I had family that lived in Pittsburgh, so I got all my cousins' hand-me-downs. So I was a Pirates fan in the 70s. So I have all the Pirates cards, but I never had any of the Phillies cards, and then I became a Phillies fan and never had any of the cards.
Exactly, yeah. So, that's, I just like knowing what people collected. And I think that's always fun. And I enjoyed it. I mean, when I started collecting football cards, there were 5 cents for a package of them. And, of course, I always ended up with, a really good player with the gum all over it. I was never one that stuck them in spokes of bikes or anything like that. The North Carolina situation. We'll talk about that in a moment. Today's show being brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Also, we're being brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and the Lenape Solar Hotline's open. Love to hear from you at 1-800-795-9565, 1-800-795-9565. We continue with more of the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK after this. All right, what did you like to collect? What's your best? We're talking about that today at 1-800-795-9565. Let's also get into the issue at North Carolina right now. North Carolina Chancellor Holden Thorpe wants his university to finally be able to move on from the academic scandal that continues to hover over its Afro and African-American studies and athletic departments. To do so, the school has enlisted a former governor and an outside consulting firm to probe whether the problems go any deeper or farther back in time. Former North Carolina Governor James Martin will lead the independent review. Martin, former member of Congress, who also serves on the board of directors of John William Pope Center for Higher Education Policy, will be assisted by Vicro Krause and Company. In May, North Carolina made public an internal probe that found 54 AFAM classes were either aberrant or irregularly taught from the summer of 2007 to the summer of 2011. That included unauthorized grade changes, forged faculty signatures on grade rolls, and limited or no class time. UNC says no student received a grade without submitting written work, but more than 50% of the students in those suspect classes were athletes, as first reported by the Raleigh News and Observer. One class last summer had an enrollment of 19, 18 football players and one former football player. Late last month, the faculty committee looking into the scandal issued a new report stating that academic counselors assigned to the athletes may have pushed them into those classes. Then last weekend, what appears to be a partial transcript of former two sports star Julius Peppers was uncovered by the NC State message board posters. His alleged low grades and class choices raise questions about how far the problems in the AFAM program go back. UNC said it shared the results of its original internal probe with the NCAA before the NCAA sanctioned the football program for improper benefits and academic misconduct. So far, it looks like as if the AFAM situation has been deemed an institutional rather than NCAA issue. Because
Say that again, because I think I heard that wrong.
So far, it looks as if the AFAM situation has been deemed an institutional rather than an NCAA issue because the classes were open to non-athletes. And it appears that the problems originated in the academic side rather than the athletic side. Yeah, one of the classes had 19 football players in it and no other students. Huh?
I thought I misheard that. I really did. Wow.
Who makes that ruling?
Wow.
Wow. Here's my favorite part of it.
It gets better, great.
Thorpe said he appointed Hunter Rawlings, president of the Association of American Universities, that's the AAU, to help North Carolina examine the future relationship between academics and athletics on campus. Here you go. You tell the athletes that you're going to take these classes, to have them pick a major, and then to set up classes that fit that major. You have them go to class, you have them complete the work, you have them get a grade while still playing sports, and then eventually they get their degrees. Look, if the finder's fee is $4 million on that, that's mine.
Well, now, will the NCAA use
it took
this
me 30, It took me 30 seconds to do that dude's job.
Will the NCAA use that investigation to decide whether there should be any punishment? Because they've set a precedent to do that.
It doesn't say.
No, of course
All
not.
All it says is that it's institutional and not academic. There are 54 student athletes that got into this thing. 54 of them. And it says here they may have been steered. What?
Has nothing to do with athletics. I don't know what we're thinking.
So that's okay. Wow.
Wouldn't doctoring a grade for an athlete be a violation of NCAA policy?
Kevin, stop using common sense on the show.
My mistake.
It doesn't work.
I'm sorry.
It doesn't work. So, there's that story. Or the Seinfeld episode with Bizarro World.
Yep.
We are in a Bizarro World. Bizarro. I am not in favor, as you've known for a long, long time, of institutions being nailed by the NCAA or whatever it happens to be. Okay? Just not. Never have been. Goes back 30 years. I have felt strongly over the years that the individuals involved are the ones that need to be taken care of. All right? Coach Anderson set up a slush fund through boosters. Coach Anderson authorizes a GA to dole out the slush fund, and they pick out five players. Let's just use an example.
Okay.
They're caught. Coach Anderson should be suspended from 10, 15, 20 years before being allowed to coach again or have a job within an athletic department in the NCAA. The GA never gets a job in the NCAA. The five student athletes that get the money, not allowed to play again. And not only that, not allowed to hold jobs within an NCAA institution for 10 years. The rest of you play on, you follow the rules. See, I've always felt that way. That the individual should be held accountable. It's why I thought when the Ohio State thing came up, as botched as that was, because there's no way you should say it's okay to play in the Sugar Bowl, but you can, yeah, you're out the next five games to start the next season. Huh?
Yeah, that I didn't get that either.
I mean, the intent was correct where they punished the individuals involved. So the intent was correct. You know, they're the ones that sold memorabilia, and we can debate whether or not you can sell your own memorabilia, your own rings. I mean, that, you know, I thought that was your possession. We can debate that later.
Yeah, you own it. What's the difference?
But again, I'm trying to be fair in here.
They're not allowed to sell a pair of sneakers that they didn't use on football? I mean, would that be a problem?
That's different.
I mean, what about eBay?
No, but that's different. No, but that's different, though, Kev. Okay? The ring thing is a reward for the season and so forth. And, yeah, that's a piece of jewelry. Getting a pair of shoes from Nike and then selling them? No. Yeah, I know once you wear them, they're yours, right. But that I almost feel like that's university issue.
You're saying because it came from a corporate supplier, we'll call it that way, that makes it a little bit different. Okay, all right, I can understand that.
Yeah, I think that's your equipment. Your equipment actually belongs to, as far as I'm concerned, the university.
Yeah, I just think once the season's over and you don't have to turn it in, I think then it becomes yours, and then you should be able to do it.
You do have to turn, but you do have to turn it.
Okay,
you're not allowed to keep it.
All right, I assumed that, so that would make sense.
You're not allowed to keep it. Okay,
then that would be.
There are certain rules on what gifts you're. Now sneakers are different. Once you wear them, you wear them. Okay, but still, I still consider that, Kevin, to be a university issue. Even though you don't give those back. Second hour. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket.